national security that Trump made this trip impossible because he reduced the security. The State Department informs Pelosi that it was too dangerous now to travel because the president had revealed their plans to the public. Another national security problem?
Definitely another national security problem, or at least a security problem for members of Congress who are part of that delegation or scheduled delegation. And yeah, it's hard to tell whether President Trump was simply oblivious to the impacts of what he was saying. I mean, I know he canceled the trip out of spite, undoubtedly, given the State of the Union, a move that Speaker Pelosi made. Whether or not he fully thought through the national security.
You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. Next up is Preference with Hedda. And please stay tuned for our special guest, the Lesbian Choir.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is also available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Board meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The KBOO Board of Directors meets the fourth Monday of the month, starting at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Real Music Film Festival through February 16th at the Whitfield Auditorium, 1219 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland, on Thursday, January 31st the Real Music Festival will screen the documentary Solo, The Evolution of the One Man Band. This film investigates the history and present-day atmosphere of this special art form. Again, that's the Real Music Film Festival showing Solo, The Evolution of the One Man Band on Thursday, January 31st at 7 p.m. at the Witzel Auditorium, 1219 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is KBOO Portland, listener-powered, non-corporate community radio.
We are a gentle, angry people, and we are singing, singing for our lives. We are a gentle, angry people, and we are singing, singing for our lives. We are gay and straight together, and we are singing, singing for our lives. We are gay and straight together, and we are singing, singing for our lives. We are a gentle, loving people, and we are singing, singing for our lives. We are a gentle, loving people, and we are singing, singing for our lives.
Welcome, everybody. This is Preference. I'm your host, Alan. We have 11 members of the Portland Lesbian Choir in the studio today. Welcome, everyone.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks. Who of you would like to tell us about the choir?
Hello, my name's Mary McCarty. I'm the director of the Portland Lesbian Choir, and we have 90 members singing. We've been in existence since 1986, and we're here today to kind of share a little bit of a message. We have a concert coming up on February 1st and 2nd called Defining Moments, and we're really singing about all the things that happen in life that change the direction of our lives. So whether it be relationship defining moments or someone dying, which is the song we're about to sing, or things where we have a natural disaster. So kind of different parts of defining moments.
Wonderful. Mary, do you want to give us a little background on the choir? 30 years.
Sure. Right? Yeah, we're in our 33rd season. Mm-hmm. The choir was formed when someone decided that they wanted to start a group, and they put a note up on a bulletin board, and a few people got together to have tea or coffee, and they decided that they were singing together and they were lesbians, so they should be called the Portland Lesbian Choir. And in 1986, that was a pretty big deal to call ourselves lesbian. In fact, we're one of the only few choirs in the nation that are LGBTQ identified that use the name lesbian in our names. So over those 33 years, we've had a few ups and downs, but we've had a really strong organization and are fortunate to be able to perform in Central Lutheran Church in Northeast Portland and have enough interest that we have two concerts, one on the 1st and one on the 2nd of February.
Wonderful. So 90 members.
Yeah.
That's a lot of folks.
It is.
That's
yeah.
Wonderful. How do folks get involved in the choir?
We are an unauditioned choir, which means anybody who can sing is welcome to come join us. We have an open audition the first week of every rehearsal term. So our next open rehearsal will be on February 13th. And we rehearse at Ainsworth United Church of Christ in Northeast. And anyone who wants to join us is welcome to come and check us out.
Wonderful. All right, what will you be singing next for us?
We're going to sing Longtime Traveler by the Waylon Jennings.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Here we go.
Ye bleeding charms of earth, farewell, your springs of joy are dry. My soul now seeks another home, a brighter world on high. I'm a long time traveling here below. I'm a long time traveling away from home. I'm a long time traveling here below. To
feedback is that you sound wonderful, so thanks for being here. So 33 years. Tell us again how the Lesbian Choir got started.
So this was a group of women who got together, decided they wanted to start singing. It was a time in our history when LGBTQ rights was certainly a huge issue, and a lot of groups in a lot of cities were starting choirs, and so I think it was really the right time to have a group that where people could come and have a safe space to be and sing together and sing and use the power of music to communicate to people who were afraid, or that, you know, this was a safe place to be and this was a way to be authentic in ourselves.
Wonderful. Those were terrible years. One measure after another every 2 years. I moved here in 92 that might have been the last one or the second to last one. So thanks for being here. What are we going to hear next?
This is a song called I Can See Clearly Now, which was popularized by the Trenchcoats. It was written by Johnny Nash.
Wonderful.
Bum bum ba ba doona, bum bum ba ba doona, bum bum ba ba doona, bum bum ba ba doona. Ba da da, I can see clearly now the way it's gone. Bum bum ba ba doona, ba da da, I can see all the obstacles in my way. Ba da da, gone are the dark clouds that had me blind. It's gonna be a bright sunshiny day. Bop, bop, boom, bop. Boom, 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 ba da da. Think I can make it now. The pain is gone. Boom, boom, ba da da. All of the bad feelings have disappeared. Now that they're gone. Here comes that rainbow I've been praying.
boom, boom, it's gonna be a bright, bright, sunshiny day.
It's gonna be a bright,
bright, sunshiny day. Bop, bop, boom, bop. Dum, 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 dum. Look all around, there's nothing but blue sky. Everywhere you turn, straight ahead, there's nothing but blue sky. I can see clearly now the rain is gone.
Pow, pow.
I can see all obstacles in my way.
Dum, 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 dum.
Ba-da-da.
Gone are the doubts that had me blind. It's gonna be a bright,
bright, bright sunshiny day. Bop, bop, boom, bop.
It's gonna be a
bright sunshiny day. Pop.
Wonderful. Thanks so much, everybody. Mary, remind us, Portland Lesbian Choir, when and where are these concerts coming up?
Concerts coming up on February 1st and 2nd, 7:30 p.m. at Central Lutheran Church. Tickets are online at plchoir.org.
And the theme for
these Defining kids? Moments.
Defining moments. What does that mean to you?
Well, it means that we have really important times in our lives where we make decisions or something happens that changes the direction of our lives.
Wonderful. Thank you, Mary, and thanks to the members of the choir who have joined us tonight.
Thank you very much for having us.
You're welcome. We're going to hear a little bit more of Bobby Humphrey's Harlem River Drive. And we'll be back on Preference. Thanks, everyone.
Oh,
Oh my gosh, we're back in preference. That is Harlem River Drive. This is an Aquarian-centric evening here at KBOO. We have Somia in the booth helping us get on the air and stay on the air. And we'll wish Somia a happy birthday. And we'll wish me a happy birthday, too. It's both of our birthdays this week. And for everyone else whose birthday it is, happy birthday to you as well. We have Marco Castro Bojorquez on the line. Marco, can you hear me?
Yes.
Wonderful.
Yes, I can hear you.
Good, good, good. My voice is a little rough and ragged today, so if you can't hear me well, just let me know. Welcome, Marco. Do you want to introduce yourself for our listeners here in preference?
Yeah, it's such a pleasure being with you and everybody that listens to your radio show. My name is Marco Castro Bojorquez, and I am a grassroots organizer that works mostly within the HIV movement, and I'm also a filmmaker. The work that I do in film are mostly focused on family acceptance within the Latinx community, but on issues of immigration, queerness, and unconditional love. Lately, I've also done some work on mental health, as I have been dealing with mental health issues myself for the past couple of years. And so most of the work that I do as an organizer or an activist or an advocate and as an artist or a filmmaker are basically stemmed out of my lived experiences. The work that I do is a way to transform pain into power. That's how I see myself in the world.
You have, I believe, spent some time in Portland. Is that correct?
Have I what?
Spent some time in Portland.
Yeah. I'm not stranger to Portland at all. In fact, I did a lot of work organizing Latinx queerness or LGBT rights as I was working for Lambda Legal for a while. Several years, and I was a community educator, so I traveled to Portland and did community education with many people in there. And I also, the first feature-length documentary that I directed is called The Song of the Hummingbird, has two of the families that I highlight in the film are from Portland. So I have great, I have actually amazing set of friends. Some of them I consider my family. And the city of Portland, with their challenges and their gifts, I really love it, especially during the summer. I like to be there during the summer.
Yeah, we've had Joaquin Lopez on the show in the past.
Yes.
He was one of the folks whose family you interviewed.
Joaquin and his father are incredible people that we highlight in the film, The Song of the Hummingbird. And it was really incredible to see the transformation, I think, all of the families, including Joaquin's participation in the film, created sort of like a renaissance of the importance on focusing in family. And Joaquin's father, it's an incredible figure that I love to see in the film. And anybody can watch the film, actually. The Song of the Hummingbird or El Canto del Colibrí is actually available in most places, including Amazon or iTunes.
Yeah, wonderful. Yeah, it's a wonderful film. Thanks for making it, and thanks for including families from our part of the world. So, let's talk about your work with folks dealing with HIV and AIDS.
Sure. Well, I basically, HIV advocacy, or the organizing and the activism that has stemmed out of HIV, is really important, and in my opinion, is one of the most clear manifestations of people's power. HIV was it has been one of the first medical conditions where, like, patients have taken into their own fight to actually be included in the decision making on how society actually deals with this incredibly powerful issue. And so, since the very inception of the beginning of HIV in this country and the rest of the world, and because of the alarming rates of people that were dying when the government was being silent, the people that live with HIV have been actually front and center fighting for the rights and making sure that we're included in the decision making of what is actually going to affect our very own lives. And so I have been working with HIV/AIDS since the very beginning, when I was diagnosed, which is in 1999 in San Francisco. I did a lot of education, public education and popular education there. And then I started working again more seriously when I joined the anti-criminalization movement in many, many states in this country, minus three. People living with HIV are criminalized because of their status. And a lot of the times, the media completely misrepresent the actual idea or the facts of people that are criminalized. Most of us that are living with HIV are people that are on treatment, people that are undetectable. The viral load is undetectable. Therefore, we are incapable to transmit the virus to other people, yet we are criminalized on the grounds of disclosure, not regardless of the use of condoms, etc. It's a very complex situation that very few people have enough information. But I was lucky enough to be part of the anti-criminalization movement in California, and we changed the law. We actually modernized the laws that existed from back in the 80s. And so that has been my entry into the work of HIV activism. And I have been most inspired and energized by the work that we are doing on HIV racial justice within the movement. Those are immigration, mental health, and HIV are the intersections that I typically work out of it.
Would you tell us more about that? Where?
Yeah, within the HIV movement, in my opinion, there has been a silence, almost silence and indifference when it comes to highlighting, protesting, becoming a true ally to the immigrant people, especially those immigrant people that are undocumented, that they have no way to defend themselves and they are the target of incredibly cruelty by the administration in the shape of many different pieces of legislation, but also just actions like the ones that happened in San Diego recently, when the government basically sent the military to actually gas and attack the people that were actually looking for asylum. And so I typically utilize the principles of human rights and to deal with issues that affect people that are immigrants and that are living with HIV. I also want to remind people that in the hands of ICE, the very agency that's supposed to take or care for immigrants, transgender people have passed away, they have died. Roxana Hernandez is one of those women that came from Honduras, actually, to try to find a better life here in the U.S. and in the hands of the people or the agencies or the ICE agents, she died. And it's not the first one. There is about 20 people that have been died in the past year or so, in the hands of the agencies that they were supposed to protect them or at least keep them out of trouble. So it's a very distinctive era that we're living here in the U.S. where immigrant communities have been the target of incredible cruelty and violence. And most of the time, I don't really hear that within the HIV movement, people really speaking out. And so I have been a broken record for the past 2 years, inviting my community to actually become more involved in the lives of people that are immigrants and that they don't have the privileges or the responsibilities and the rights that someone who, like myself, who is a green card holder or someone who is a citizen has. And so I will never stop fighting and bringing up to the surface the actual the lives of the people that are undocumented and that are the most vulnerable and that are the ones that have received the brunt of the most horrible attacks by the administration.
Indeed.
Yeah. And I think that is as the president of the U.S. Will use this word very often. I think that is a disgrace that actually the administration is taking away, attempting to take away the health care that people should receive as a human right, their food, with this public charge issue where he's trying to change and actually stigmatize even more than what the communities already have dealing with, the idea of getting support when you need it the most by agencies and processes that have been created, especially because it's well documented that there are times when people need help. And it seems to me that in this administration, anybody who may perceive somebody that needs help is perceived as somebody who's weak, therefore it should be expelled from this country as if we are not diverse. I find it ridiculous and pathetic and very short-minded, and I will not stop one second of my life to fight injustice of this caliber. And I think that everybody else that is listening to the show should also make the point to do something about it as well, besides being, besides saying I hear you, I also want to hear that people actually are doing something about it, because the reality of those folks that are, and the children that are actually right now in detention, their parents that they don't know where their children are at, the people that are sick and that are actually in detention centers, it is not pleasant. And I don't think that we'll be able to manage to be in that situation for even a couple of hours. So my heart goes out to them.
Your call to action. What would you like to see folks doing?
I definitely think that people should donate their time and efforts to organizations that are actually working with the communities that are most affected. But before that, I think that it will be important for the people that are actually on the sidelines, just seeing what is happening and not taking a stand. People need to take a stand. And the stand is that they're either with the administration or they're against the administration. And I feel that people need to exercise muscle courage a lot more than what they're doing. And I also feel that it's important for people to be informed about the realities of immigrant people, in this case, immigrant people living with HIV, in the case of the issue that I was going to address with you. People need to get informed and do that work themselves. People should not be expecting that us immigrant people are the ones in charge to educate everybody about our reality, because we have enough crap to deal with than to also being the ones that have to do an immigration 101 every time that we say hello to somebody. That's ridiculous, and people have their time to actually find information and education. And sometimes I feel that people ask me, what do you want us to do? I said, well, what would you like? What is it that you would like to do? Why don't you come up with some ideas? Because we've been suggesting left and right since the very day that this president took power. And every single day, I actually get up from bed and I think, what is it that is going to happen this time? That is going to come in the shape of another blow to our community, and it doesn't really disappoint. Every single day there is something that has been created specifically to try to kill us, but we have a tremendous amount of power by our ancestry, by our communities, that despite the fact that we're having a hard time, we're not going to give up, and we're not going anywhere. We're going to stay still here. And so people should take into their own hands the idea or get informed about our realities, and also people should start thinking also in their own, what is it that they can do for immigrant communities that are being targeted by government from the very beginning.
Thank you for that, Marco. This is Preference. I'm your host, Alan. We've got Somia in the booth celebrating a birthday with us. We're talking with Marco Castro Bajorquez. Marco, you are... one of the things you've been taking on is the question of the International AIDS Conference in 2020 being hosted... by the U.S. in San Francisco. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, the International AIDS Society is an organization that I respect very much, and I have good friends that are part of IAS. They decided to host the international conference here in the United States, specifically in San Francisco and Oakland. They have quite a problematic way to divide the conference, where, the science and the updates of the HIV are happening in one city. And then in another place, they call it what is called the global village, which is basically mostly like people of color that are gathering. So it's 2020. It's going to take place in San Francisco, and we actually created a group that originally it was basically a coalition of people that, by the way, I should say that the opinions that I am telling you here are mine and not of the whole group, but we do agree on the fact that we were from the very beginning of this year when we started organizing, that we were against the idea for this conference to take place in San Francisco and in Oakland because of the lack of we have been seeing so many atrocities, human rights violations, and discriminatory policies that affect key populations like the community, like my community, Latino immigrant, Latinx immigrant community, And we felt that the conference should be relocated because there is, to begin with, a number of people that won't be able to attend the HIV, the AIDS 2020 conference because of the Muslim ban. People that that use drugs won't be able to attend. People that are sex workers won't be able to attend. And those of us that may be able to travel to the U.S. May go through like incredibly difficult situations to get into the country. And I have to say that I personally, just a couple of weeks ago, experienced the most horrific treatment when I came to San Francisco, coming from speaking engagement at the UNAIDS, after the fact that this person, this agent, had all of my documentation in order that there was an ID that read that I was a speaker for the UNAIDS in the past couple of days from where I was entering the country. I still was treated as if I was a criminal. I was questioned, among other things, how did I contract HIV? I was asked if I was a terrorist, and I was also asked if I support President Trump, among other things. So I don't think that I have had the most stressful situation in the longest time in my life. And I also felt that part of it was that I was also almost pushed me to start questioning my trust in humanity, which is very tragic and dramatic. So basically a group of us have been doing some oppositional advocacy, asking, you know, the question, how is it that it's okay for this conference to be scheduled in the U.S. When we know that this government has explicitly declare a war against key populations that are the most marginalized. And so for me specifically, the issue that I struggle the most with is with the fact that that this conference is scheduled to take place in San Francisco is that, you know, they claim that it will show the resilience of the people of the U.S. and, you know, an opportunity to showcase our strength. But in my opinion, it's at the cost of the suffering of all of us that live in the margins. And I find that is very easy to say such, you know, beautiful phrase. But it's another thing to actually suffer, to be questioned by someone in so many levels, to be questioned your own existence. We actually, the group that started working at the beginning of this year around this issue have evolved. Some of us are still working and concerned about what will happen to those brothers and sisters that come to the U.S. to attend this conference and how will they be treated. Will they be actually let into the country or not? And some others have organized and created an alternative space in Mexico City that has been named HIV 2020. And that will be a conference that will happen simultaneously with AIDS 2020. You're sending a message specifically about the importance of community buy-in and community understanding and community decisions. These conferences that are supposedly were created to support people living with HIV have become business. And sometimes I feel that the very reason why it was created, it gets lost in the mix. You know, capitalism is a powerful force. And I think that more and more these conferences need to do a realignment in their values and how they operate. In the U.S., there is a conference that actually provides you with the times and the dates and a how-to if you want to protest the conference, which is ridiculous. So the group that got together and decided that we were going to create some oppositional advocacy for HIV or for AIDS 2020, it's called HIV Power Shift, and this is one of the issues that we find that we need to intervene. And doing this type of work, I have to say that is not very pleasant, and it takes a lot of energy. It's like stepping up to racism on a daily basis or white supremacists. It takes a toll on people, but we are very much clear and defined that we oppose for the actual existence of the conference here in the U.S. soil, and therefore we have created an alternative space. But that doesn't mean that we don't struggle as we do this work.
So, this alternative space you and folks are creating in Mexico to provide, let's say, a different narrative and an opportunity for different narratives and different kinds of conversations and focuses. And how far along? I guess that's next year now. I guess it's 2019 now, so that's next year. I was still a year behind. Until just now. happy birthday, me. So tell me more about the kinds of conversations, the kinds of engagement folks can find, or that you have in mind that folks will be able to find at this event next year.
In the HIV 2020 conference in Mexico, we hope that there's a few things that I can actually share with you. We want to build a safe and a friendly space for equal exchange of information, knowledge, experience, and expertise by ensuring that diverse voices are heard and reflected. We also are thinking of a model of innovative approach where we share new tools, research, and strategies and real life implications with communities as equal partners. We also are thinking of amplifying the community voices by calling out the inequities experienced across key populations and specific legal restrictions on some key populations' rights to freedom of movement. There is something about body autonomy. I should be the one who makes decisions about where should my body be and stay, not governments, not borders. We also wanted to promote community-led solutions for this conference and follow good practice in sexual health and human rights, reaffirming community commitments and priorities to the global health and human rights response, inclusive of HIV. And then we wanted to demonstrate the importance of meaningful involvement of communities in health and human rights responses. So we're calling for people, advocates, community-based organizations, healthcare and services providers, researchers, public health officials, and funders to stand in solidarity with our group. Collectively, we are insisting that the meaningful engagement of people living with HIV, especially those that are disproportionately affected by HIV in the global response, should be front and center in this type of gatherings. I don't think that we are, I think that it's going to be a first time effort where the community have decided to just create a space in a different place and I think that we're also going to learn as much as we go about it. I am not sure if I'm going to go to Mexico or if I'm going to stay here in San Francisco. I think that I'll make that decision when it's closer, because I think that it's important to note that the people in Oakland and in San Francisco, communities that are there, and folks that cannot travel to Mexico either, or that are basically in the midst of this conference, will also need some support. And the fact that I am against AIDS 2020 to take place in San Francisco doesn't mean that I may not feel that there is some need for support, especially when we don't really know what's going to happen. It's an election year, and the escalation of the atrocities against these key communities by this government has continued on a daily basis. So we're bracing ourselves for whatever may be happening at the time, but we are we're strong, and we're also very defined and committed to highlighting the discrepancies when it comes to serving people dealing with HIV, and especially those that are very much discriminated on a daily basis, which are people from the Middle Eastern, from the African and Caribbean and the Latin American countries, especially those people that are LGBT, those people that are of a darker skin, and definitely people that use drugs, sex workers, and transgender people. And on transgender people, I should say that, you know, there is a strong commitment to highlight the lives of transgender folks that are beloved members of our community. And in my case, you know, my best friends are transgender people. And right now is a difficult time as we experience that this government again, you know, is attempting to take away our rights and our spirits in a way. But I have to remind myself that we are a strong community, and we've gone through a lot. We have to continue fighting.
Indeed. We're always just getting started, I think.
Yes. Yes. At some point, we need a little break, because frankly, I feel like that I really love being in the U.S. It's been my home since I was 22. So most of my life, I have been here, and I consider the U.S. my home. But when every time that I turn on the TV, which I don't own a TV, but if I was to turn on the TV, within 5 seconds, I would be completely and utterly offended by something out there. And it's a difficult reality to live in this way. That's why I'm asking people to like take a stand, to exercise muscle courage, and to really like do something for communities that have not stopped being bombarded with attacks by the administration and people that support them.
Well, we just have a couple of minutes left, Marco, and thank you so much for joining us. Do you have last thoughts on this conversation? I have a feeling we'll be chatting again in the future. For today, do you have some last thoughts you want to share?
If people want to be involved with HIV Power Shift or AIDS 2020 for All, they can just go to our website. It's called AIDS2020forall.com. And if people want more information about and how to support AIDS 2020, which is the community gathering that will take place in Mexico City on July 6th and through the July 8th, they can go to our website. Is HIV2020.org. If people are interested in the work that within the HIV movement that is being done around the Latinx community. They can join our network of Latinx immigrant people living with HIV, and the address is hivenasabiertas.com. I will send you all of those, Alan, and I really appreciate you having me here. I hope that despite the fact that it's a somber and difficult issues that we're tackling, that people understand that the resilience and the power and the brilliance and exuberance of the Latinx community in the U.S., it's going to keep being alive and kicking, that we have a tremendous amount of ancestry, our ancestors, and also just our people, our flavors, our colors, and our tastes, and our souls are going to keep us afloat. I send much love to everybody that is of Latinx immigrant community out there, and to all of us, all of you that are our allies. I appreciate your support, and thank you.
Thank you, Marco, and blessings. And thanks for chatting with us tonight.
Thank you so much for having me, Alan. Good night.
You're welcome. Good night. This has been Preference. Up next is Calculated Conversation. Thanks, everyone.
Listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. The time is 7 o'clock. Next up is Calculated Conversation with David and Ken.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 29th annual Cascade Festival of African Films from Friday, February 1st through Saturday, March 2nd. The Cascade Festival of African Films represent different countries and cultures and a range of lifestyles from pre-colonial to modern times, including both rural and urban settings. Films include Razzia, a film from Morocco, and more at the Hollywood Theater, and Wale from Burkina Faso, Fig Tree from Ethiopia, shorts from emerging African filmmakers, and many more at the Moriarty Arts and Humanities Building, Room 104, at the PCC Cascade Campus, 705 North Killingsworth Street in Portland. Again, that's the 29th Annual Cascade Festival of African Films from Friday, February 1st through Saturday, March 2nd. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.